Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio, the only show broadcasting live from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Race and Sportsbook, you are listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm just assuming that everybody knows what the fight capital of the world is, huh?
Yeah, you kind of got to. Back in the day, you could make arguments.
Because now that MMA's in New York and boxing, I mean, they got this Barclays Center, old MSG. There's a lot of stuff that's been going down in New York. But this is the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, and we're in the Mandalay Bay. And I'm George, and Goes is to my right. Dan Tom is to my left. Back East producing the show, she's Gabulous. What's up, guys?
Gabulous, I can't tell, is in a good mood or a bad mood today.
Yeah, I can't tell either.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it exciting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Got to keep she's you on cool. your toes.
Right now.
All right, we got a fun show planned for today. We are going to talk to a couple different fighters. One who just fought. The other one who's going to fight. In between, we might get a drop in from a notable MMA manager. But the rest of the time will be covering the latest news and, of course, recapping Bellator 222, which took place this past Saturday at Madison Square Garden, the other fight capital of the world. Fight capital JV, we'll call it. Listen, we'd love for you to call in and participate by calling 877-FIGHT93, 877-344-4893. Hit us up on Twitter at MMA on SiriusXM. It works for our show, as well as the other ones on the channel. You can correspond with the hosts and the producers there. All right, so, you know what? Bellator 222 can wait just a couple minutes. How was your weekend, Goes?
It was good. I really liked it.
Yeah.
It was very relaxing. Got out and had some fun, too. So, good mixture.
All right. Dan Tom, how was your weekend?
Good, man. Good. Saw the fights, which I'm sure we'll talk all about, and getting ready for everything going on this week, which I'm sure we'll get into. But good weekend overall.
All right. And you, Gabby?
Sorry, we were wrapping stuff up from the last show. I didn't hear what you said. Were you asking me?
I said, in 10 seconds, if you can answer this question, I'll give you $100, but it already expired. So
you're such a liar. You're such a liar. This is what happens when I'm in studio and people are asking me questions, guys. What do you want me to do?
How was your weekend?
Oh, my weekend was good. But
what'd you do, Foo?
Yesterday was Father's Day, so that was fun.
You're kidding.
I don't know if you guys know that, but no, I'm just kidding. So I was with my grandfather and my father yesterday. That was really nice. My grandfather is 93 years old.
Whoa. What's his name?
Vito.
Ooh, perfect.
Wow. Yeah, he's old school. That's from awesome. Sicily. Yeah. He's the coolest. He's still kicking. And then my dad is 61, and he played soccer all morning before we ended up eating.
Damn.
Yeah, he's
crazy.
I saw
that picture you posted. That was pretty cool.
Isn't that insane?
Cool picture.
Isn't my dad ridiculous?
Where did he play?
He played in Sicily. He actually played here first and then went over to Sicily after high school, played there for a little bit, and he was going to play longer, but he got a really bad injury, came back over here to get better, and then ended up meeting my mom, and then that was it.
The rest is history.
Yeah, she ruined it for him.
Didn't we ask her a hypothetical where she had to play soccer, and that's how we found out that she actually comes from a family that can play?
Something like that. I'm piecing it all together. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm the only person on this channel that loves soccer.
Vito. That's Vito. Like old school right there. You know what
I mean? Luke likes it too. He just has crazy ideas.
But of course, the only other host on this channel that likes soccer likes my rival team. Because I like Barcelona. Yeah. He likes Real Madrid. So we don't like each other anyway.
Oh, wow. I wish they could just play each other every weekend. Mm. The other teams is such a dip, you know, before you get...
Well,
with respect to Atletico Madrid, but then after that, there seems to be this dip. You'll look at the scores in Spain, and it's like 8-0, 6-1. You're like, come on, man. Mm. Not that that never happens in the English Premier League, but English Premier League, you honestly got to buckle up. You got to put your seatbelt on, and say a prayer, man, because you just don't know what it's going to be like on that particular day. You may win them all, but you will be challenged every single weekend, man. It's such a fast and physical game, but whatever. The other day, I think I went on an NBA tangent, and somebody goes, "What is this, the NBA channel?" So I don't want anyone to think that this is a soccer channel.
That is the one complaint that just cracks me up. It's very basic, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, I told them, look, 10 hours a day, it's 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, so it's 10 hours per week is what I meant to say. Come on, man. Okay, give us a break. Every once in a while, we might say something that has to do with something else other than MMA, and frankly, too bad if you don't like it. But, all right, Bellator 222, it took place on Friday, and I think there was a lot of interesting fights. There was a lot of great action, and then there was all these little subplots and twists that came out of fight week. So we'll start right at the top. As a matter of fact, the winner of that fight, Lyoto Machida, he will be a guest of ours. Excuse me, he was the co-main event. He defeated Chael Sonnen, and he got himself the finish, and he'll be a guest of ours in the second hour. But he looked good. He looked good, man. He had that jumping knee, which is, you know how I said the calf kick has kind of been like one of these techniques that's been interesting these last 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing the knee from different attacks just come into play so much. We've all known it for many years with the Muay Thai plum, but how about like guys like Michael Venom Page and Taiwan Claxton, where they can just leap across, you know, like a ninja, mm-hmm. and hit you with that, and then the guys that do the standing knee varieties. I really, really love the knee attacks, but Chael battled, but because he took a couple really, really wicked shots. You like that? Wicked? And but in the end, Lyoto Machida got his hand raised, and as soon as the fight ended, Machida's saying, look, I want to wear gold, and so give me whoever it takes to get to Ryan Bader, because this fight was fought at light heavyweight. And Chael Sonnen retired. Mm-hmm. React goes.
Well, going back to your knee comment, I think what made it even more interesting was Lyoto's been landing a knee for the longest time, but he was usually planted when he would throw it. He'd time it perfectly and hit people to the body.
Right, and now he's
jumping. He's supposed to be older, less athletic, and now you got to worry about that too. I mean, that's pretty scary. Yeah. But it was fun. Dan and I were here a little early, and we were watching some of the fights again. And what I was telling him that I found interesting about this card is all the guys that lost on the card, at least they went out doing what they do best. You know, Chael attempted to wrestle right away. It's not mm-hmm. like you could say, oh, man, why'd he mess around? You don't do that with Lyoto Machida. Mm-hmm. He tried. It just didn't work out. You know, and props to Chael Sonnen. I mean, it was a good career. It had its blemishes here and there, but really that's a dude that can look back on. Even though he didn't win a title, he did change the sport.
Okay, I can accept that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll probably save a little bit of my – I don't want to venture too far into the retirement talk. I'm sure we'll get into that later with the DD. But I like what you guys are talking about the knees. And I was going to say, George, if you like those knees, that means you must like Bellator. And sure enough, you strung off a bunch of examples that were Bellator, because knees on this card and just on a lot of Bellator cards, it feels like the last year or two, like most of their highlight – you know, maybe Mike Bonnet's got to ask. I know he compiles those monthly knockouts, but – I got to imagine, like, all the flying knee ones seem to be happening in Bellator for the most part, mm-hmm. which is crazy. And I like what Ghost said, too. He was saying that about the show. You know, a lot of these guys, which we'll talk about later, kind of went out doing their stuff, so to speak. And Chael did as well. And, yeah, I got to imagine, like, what the heck was he thinking after the first one? Much less, okay, there's no way I'm getting hit with two of these things. And, like, yeah, like Ghost said, he's getting older, yet, like, to put in the words of Gehar Musasi,
he found the fountain of youth. What the fuck?
You know, like Machida looking like a boy out there, but he's looking good, man. And props to Machida, man. I took a shot on the dog there. I think me and G might have been the only people to roll with the mm-hmm. American gangster. But he went out. You know what? You can't take it away from him. He had plenty of points to quit. I know that's been something that's been
that's
thrown
true.
On Chael. He's been
that's
very
a good
open about
point.
That. And even though he lost, you know, he went out doing.
Because I was a guy that had a little bit of money on him, but yet I saw him still fighting, mm-hmm. fighting to get to where he's strong and to clear mm-hmm. his cobwebs. He wanted to get the dragon off his feet because the dragon was a beast.
Yeah.
But he kept trying for singles. He kept trying to push him up against the cage. He just wanted to lock up with him, you know, and make sure that there was no space. And in doing all that, and how about the experience of being on the ground? And you could tell the referees overlooking, mm-hmm. talking, getting ready to intercede and stop the fight, and Chael would do just the necessary movements, whether it was a cover-up or there was some sort of a shift in his body weight or the eventual stand-up that allowed him to continue fighting. Now, in the end, Lyoto was just too much, and he landed another one of those. But, you know, I'm connecting dots here when I'm talking about knees. The knee attack is so diverse. How about when Chael lost to Anderson the second time? He took that big knee in the chest, remember?
Yeah.
So, like I said, there's just so many different ways to attack with the knee. And yet this is a sport that still says knees on the ground are illegal. But all these other KOs we're describing
Saint-Pierre,
are illegal.
Saint-Pierre Matt Serra the second time, he was just breaking
him
down.
Oh, in the body.
Turtle position.
Yeah.
It seems like we should have seen that more because that position has happened so much.
You would think.
Yeah, good pull.
Or some guys, like I've seen some of them just knee the tailbone as well, and I see a bunch of guys do a quick flip. They don't like that one. But if you have a knee attack that we left out, please holler at us.
Yeah, there we go.
877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893. And the beauty of this is it's not all just strikers. Henry Cejudo, mm-hmm. Marlon Moraes' downfall was when he would start tasting a lot of those knees in the clinch. You know, so that was a skill and technique that Henry Cejudo was able to adapt. You know, this is a wrestler, a kid – came up through wrestling, but yet, you know, he's not only developed his hands, he's developed his Muay Thai. Anyway, in the end, Lyoto got the win. And look, these divisions are quite shallow, with the exception of maybe featherweight and middle or welterweight. And pretty much if they sign you, plus if they're signing you, it's for a reason.
Right.
You can be winning a fight or two and then asking to fight for a world title. And Lyoto, I guess, has the ability to do this at light heavyweight or heavyweight. But Chael had stated, now granted, not everything Chael states is always 100% genuine, but he had stated that the winner of that fight could get a title shot. So I think Lyoto would not be wrong in any way to go, hey, remember what Chael said? So I'll fight Bader if, mm-hmm. you know, Mo's retired, Rampage has gone up to heavyweight, Liam just got defeated. You know, so slowly but surely, unless you want to run Davis and Bader back for the third time, I'm here, you know.
And it guess what? Sense for them to do that.
Lyoto's got to win over Bader. Mm-hmm. You know, back in L.A., if I'm not mistaken. So you would think Bader might go, that'd be a nice one to avenge. But regardless,
that's right.
He won on Friday night, and congratulations to Lyoto Machida for the win and Chael Sonnen for his career.
It would make sense for them to go that route. They can sell the fact that he has a win over him already. And if you look at the rest of the card, the way it's going to pan out right now when we go through it, a lot of fights that you kind of want to see go a certain way haven't gone Bellator's way.
Yeah.
And right now they have the opportunity where they do have a guy like Lyoto Machida who's going on that right path. Might as well strike where the iron's hot and not mess around.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll touch about the other stuff that you just hinted as far as stuff not going the way, but whether we push on to more Chael or more results, George, I just want to say one last thing that you touched on, I'm glad you did, was the referee doing a good job, because I've given that referee a lot of crap. I might even tweet it at him that night, you know, just like...
Is that Todd Anderson?
Todd Anderson, exactly. And he's he's made some questionable ones, more notably for UFC 208. And it's not so much picking on these refs in particular, guys, because, you know, it's more just the New York Commission. I think we've seen a lot of foolery. And Todd Anderson, there are some questions about how he officiated a title match in the opening of the Horiguchi Kawa, which we'll get to. But as far as the match we're talking about, like George said, I want to give credit where credit's due. He did a really good job with that stop.
Yeah, that's a tough, tough job, man. And usually the only time someone's hollering a referee's name is when they mess up.
Exactly.
So, yeah, nothing wrong with giving them praise.
Praise.
Real quick, in the main event, because I flip-flopped the two, it started off with Chael Sonnen and Lyoto Machida up until like maybe 3 weeks before the fight. They were the main event. They flip-flopped themselves.
Yeah.
Roy McDonald defeated Neiman Gracie. So not only does he hold on to his title because he put his Bellator welterweight title at stake against the undefeated Brazilian, it was also simultaneously a semifinal in the Grand Prix. So Roy McDonald, that's why you saw him face off versus Douglas Lima, a guy who he recently fought. Well, maybe not recently, but you know what I mean. A couple fights ago. They had a great fight, too. But they're going to do it again because those two were the best of the eight. Ed Ruth, Neiman Gracie, Paul Daly, MVP, all those guys. They're the final two combatants. So that will be the final of the Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix. It'll also be a title fight. So that's two belts at stake. And, of course, the $1 million prize offered by hip-hop star 50 Cent. Mm-hmm. So that should be a big, big fight for both guys to get amped up for.
You know,
definitely.
Again, it's... That fight was fun. It's so hard to really judge where Rory McDonald is mentally and physically, because that was probably the better John Fitch we've seen in a while that he had to face, okay? And then Neiman Gracie, I thought, did pretty good.
He did.
He came out and he put the fight where he needed to get it.
He had some dominant positions.
It just didn't work out. And I think some people have looked at that and said, wow, Rory's not as great as he used to be. I look at it
as Neiman's
just
fought well.
Really, yeah. Neiman's made some big strides in his game, and I think he's just tough out for anyone. So it's so hard to kind of figure out where Rory's going to be when it comes to this final. It's tough, but hats off to him because he had a lot of things on his mind going in, and it looks like he's gotten over those for now. So we'll see what he does.
Yeah, I can't remember which side you guys picked. I picked the upset here for Gracie, not because I was discounting Rory's skills. It's more the mental kind of thing we're talking about. You're right. It's so hard to figure out where he's going to be. And he almost seemed like he was coasting a little bit in the beginning, was almost on just kind of not zombie mode, but maybe an autopilot, if you will, of sorts, and was able to kind of pick up his own steam and keep his head in the fight, which is great. But, yeah, I still don't know if, like, I don't know if anybody's going to be super confident picking him against Lima, even though he technically already beat the man. So it's real interesting to see.
Well, because Lima, yeah, for sure seems to have improved tenfold every fight, but especially since that title fight, he has been a beast, and
yes.
Rory has just been getting by.
Yes.
So it could be the opposition, or I don't know what it is, but you're right. My early inkling, if you guys say, gun to the head, who do you want?
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably go, give me Lima, man. And I'm telling you, when this tournament would have started, I probably would have said, to win it all, give me McDonald. And I wouldn't be as secure in that play.
That's fair. That's very fair.
Yeah. So, again, lots at stake there for Rory McDonald. He kept his belt. He's in the final. And he'll be fighting for a $1 million bonus, aside from their normal payday. He did say he wants to wait until November. Bellator was pushing more for September. All right, we'll discuss the rest of the card, but we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go back to that story about Chael Sonnen, the American gangster who retired. We got some audio cuts, and maybe he can tell you in his words what he was thinking during the fight and why he, of course, is calling it quits. Plus, we'll come back and continue breaking down the rest of the card. We'll give you all the ins and outs, winners and losers, and all that stuff when we come back.
Yeah. 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 If I can't do it, homie, it can't be done. Now I'ma let the champagne bottle pop. I'ma take it to the top. Show, I'ma make it hot, baby.
Put excellence and excitement in your Vitamix. Add ice, and you get MMA Junkie Radio.
Rachel Barbeau hits the airwaves after the final out of tonight's College World Series games with audio from the locker room in Omaha, as well as the latest headlines in the college sports world on College Sports Tonight, ESPNU Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 84. Shout out to the Los Angeles Lakers for acquiring AD, Anthony Davis. Cannot wait for that here in 2019. That trade got executed this past weekend. Sure, we gave up most of our roster, but guess what? We just acquired arguably one of the top three
most
players
of our
in the NBA.
Pretty accurate.
hey, real quick, is there anybody lower on the music totem pole than guy in rap song who goes, yeah, Or like the DJ Khaled's of the world. I don't know what he does, but he's just like, DJ Khaled,
I don't know exactly what he does. And then really,
and
every
one.
Pitbull song, are we really tuning in for Pitbull, or are we tuning in for Pitbull and Friend? Because I feel like we're tuning in more for the Friend.
All I know is Pitbull, when he does his photo shoots, he goes by the Dagestani playbook, where it's no smiles.
Yeah.
Mine is like sitting in front of a table with plenty of food, because you know those Dagestani dudes, there's always like a massive feast, and they're just, everybody, pose for a picture, but no smiles. Like, do you get in trouble for not smiling? How does that work?
So they like our gangster pick idea.
Yeah, there we go.
Why is he always in a tuxedo?
And by the
He's
way,
always in a tuxedo. He is. Yeah.
Sticking with the music thing, and then we'll go back to MMA.
Yes.
Remember how I came in last Monday raving about the practice at Extreme Couture, how intense it was?
Uh-huh.
Well, this one was back to grappling. It wasn't as much strength and conditioning. It was a fun practice. I enjoyed it. And remember, I don't come in here talking about the secrets of the trade or anything like that. Unless it's something good, then I want to give the guy some shine. Well, this one is not good, but I'm still going to say it anyway. For some reason, nobody would change the dial, and these guys were grappling the country. I don't hate country. It's not for me, but it was just like slow country music.
Yes.
And I was like, I don't get it. Like, there should just be some more bass or a beat, or, again, if it's country, just something more lively. And it was like the most deadest song. I couldn't believe it. So whoever was DJing today, it might have been, I mean, Dennis Davis is the coach. He's going to have to take this one. Yeah, he's going to have to find a new playlist, man.
Extreme Couture, you know, I love it. But if I had to be objective on one thing, guys, we've had some of the worst music that
you've heard of the country before?
Just throughout the years, it's been really bad. I will say one thing, though. We used to have a Saturday practice, and, you know, they made the efforts. They put the iPod thing in there. But shout out to Neil. He used to have a pretty decent mix. He would have more classic rock or maybe some stuff that maybe is not country, but, like, it would be like Johnny Cash, When the Man Comes Around. Mm-hmm. We'd have a little bit of, you know, Stranglehold, Ted Nugent, maybe some CCR, you know, so some run through the jungle, you know, so it'd be like classic rock, you know, more of that twine, but it would have a certain like gritty and grindy pickup to it. So there's a way to go about it. I know what you're saying. It's not that you're hating on country or anything.
For one of those beasts to say something, because I was on the verge of saying something, but I thought, no, I'm going to lose my privileges, so I'm just going to shut my app over here. Yeah, and not say anything, but it was just slow, so slow, and the guys were grappling, and I was like, wow, I don't know. I just had to say that.
But if Jumbo Josh ran the music, we'd probably have more of a chance of Brock Lesnar showing up at the gym because, like, every other song would be Metallica, right? Would be
interesting. Yeah. All right. I mentioned Chael Sonnen retired. Guys, what's his legacy? Can you encapsulate it here? 30 seconds, a minute. Take your time, man. What stands about Chael inside of the cages that he fought in, octagons, decagons, whatever, and then outside?
I think he came in kind of like a guy, like a Randy Couture, where he didn't look like an Adonis, you know, like some of the guys that were going around at the time. Chuck Liddell had the mohawk or that sort of thing. He just grinded. He really did. And I think he set the table for guys like Conor McGregor that came in and said, okay, I can kind of take a piece out of his playbook and run with it and get fights that maybe some people don't think I deserve. But even in those fights, he still kind of showed up in a lot of those fights Chael did. So I think that's going to be his legacy, is being able to change the game in that regard. And I had a third point that, guess what? I don't remember.
Well, if you remember,
we'll get back to
just interrupt me at any time then. I just say staying relevant and being able to ingratiate yourself. Those two things. Because not only did he do all those things that Ghost said, he did it without the titles that Conor had. He did it without the wins that Conor even had, or most guys have. Because, again, a lot of those fights he lost, guys. He's got a really impressive resume. But he lost, you could argue, toward the end there, especially he lost more than he won. But it didn't matter whether it was drugs, drug tests, you know, positive for EPO, which, you know, people were just chastising TJ Dillashaw live performance. Like, people are still like going up to Chael for autographs. He, for what it's worth, is a really nice guy if you talk to him outside of the mixed martial arts arena, folks. So, you know, whether he had the win, even when he lost, turned up positive for drugs, didn't have the title, came up short, he kept himself relevant, whether it was his podcast, the way he talked. And there is a simpleness to it. Yeah, he kind of got crazy sometimes, and we all have our favorite moments. Maybe the Nogueira with the bus story is a favorite of a lot of people's. But my favorite, man, comes back when he fought Brian Baker, even before Paulo Filho at WEC. And I think
Hard Rock.
Yeah, and he just wins maybe by decision. Nothing too crazy, right? Again, that's another thing. Chael didn't even have the crazy knockout style like a McGregor. He had more of a quote-unquote boring wrestling style and was still able to make himself relevant. And at the end of that Brian Baker fight, he goes, you know, he tells Todd Harris, thank you for the compliment. He shows, like, this sportsmanship and class and acknowledgement that most athletes don't show toward, you know, us media folk or whatever. But then he was also able to turn it on and be like, and by the way, I, unlike other people in the UFC, he was already throwing Anderson Silva a shade way back then, folks. He said, I will fight any man that God created on this roster. And just little things like that. I mean, I'm not a God-fearing man per se, but I believe Chael Sonnen when he said that. And he put
Brian Baker over, too. He said, that guy's going to be a world champion one day. And at the time, Brian was battling
cancer.
Former cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This was, again, about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was when we first got a taste of Chael really, really turning it on and either being a smack talker, a storyteller, whatever you want to call him. Look, he didn't fulfill his promise to his father of being a world champion in a major organization. By that, we mean UFC, Pride, Strikeforce, Bellator, probably even PFL. He didn't do that, but he did beat 8 former world champions at one point or another. And I'm talking about champions of leagues like the one I just described. Mm-hmm. So what I mean is, even though he doesn't have a belt that will be in his man cave or in his living room or anything, I think he can he can still feel good about the fact that he was a championship-level fighter. Otherwise, he wouldn't have beaten a Hua. Yeah. Otherwise, he wouldn't have beaten a Rampage or whatever, because he wouldn't have been that level. It's just, it didn't work out for him. And look, a guy like Michael Bisping was filming a movie, and Chris Weidman gets hurt, and they go, hey, you want to fill in on 3 weeks? He's like, well, yeah, you know, okay, I'll go in there. And he knocked out Luke Rockhold, and guess what? He gets to wear a belt. But he was that close to also having a similar type of a career where he just didn't maybe win a major belt. But it's all about being in the right place at the right time. And I don't want to say this without sounding disrespectful. You also have to be a bit lucky. Now, by that, I don't mean he got lucky against Luke Rockhold, because the punch landed where he intended it. What I mean is catch a break and getting a call, hey, do you want to fill in on a title fight? Now, Chael did get quite a few of those breaks because of his ability to sell a fight, but he just wasn't able to win those key fights that would have really been a nice cherry on the sundae. But again, I know he felt terrible, but he shouldn't, because he contributed to the sport in many ways, and that's that. Now, that said, there is also another side to it, which we can maybe get into maybe in the second half of the show or whatever, because I want to stay on point a little bit. But, yeah, Dan alluded to it. There have been some failed tests. And, boy, I saw a few people on Twitter also kind of revealing their feelings about how Chael used to build fights or some of the things he may have said, stuff with racial overtones. But, see, I never took it that way.
Yeah.
I never really felt like that was – there, but I'm not, my radar doesn't look out for that like other people may or may not. Or whatever. But what I'm saying is, I was just surprised at Twitter. I thought it'd be a little bit more positive than negative, but like even Kevin Ali had an article with the headline that got right to it. You know what I mean?
Did he have something with Chael back in the day?
I don't know. Kevin always tells it like it is, and you know, who can deny him of the credentials that he has? So if that's the way he wanted to craft the story, that's totally fine. But if you have a Chael Sonnen memory, again, it's 877-FIGHT93, 877-344-4893.
Hey, before you get too far with the championship talk, though, we got to mention that WEC, you know, with Paul Ophelia.
Sure.
I mean, the Phantom Tap, the weird first fight, and Paul Ophelia started going into a spiral between their second fight to where he showed up out of weight. He didn't give Chael the opportunity to win, which sucked because his dad was still alive. And that would have aged, you know, it wouldn't have been a UFC title, but the WEC aged pretty damn well when you look
did.
You know, the Bensons, the other
Jose,
guys.
Jose, Fabers, Burrell.
Other guys would have made the argument for him just from their success, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was always a bummer, and people don't realize, too. Remember, Paulo Filho, am I not crazy, guys? I mean, he was at a point where it was Kung Lee, Paulo Filho, Anderson Silva there talking about the best middleweights in the world. Remember that, guys? Mm-hmm. And they were all in different organizations, and Paulo Filho was a name for a minute.
Forgot about Cowboy, Benson
yeah.
Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony Pettis.
Great guys came from WEC.
Great fighters came out of the WEC. Demetrius Johnson. Joseph Benavides.
Brian Stan came from. He had a title division
a title.
Up, light heavyweight, but yeah. then was a middleweight presence in the UFC commentator.
Yeah.
I remember my point. Chael's first run in the UFC, I think he was like 25 fights in. It didn't really go his way.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
but that
right.
doesn't always tell the whole story. You can always bounce back from that. And you saw the way he was able to bounce back in his career and make something of it. I remember being, I think he fought at UFC 60. And I remember thinking.
The one in LA?
Yeah, I remember thinking, oh man, I've seen this guy fight a lot. He just may not have it. Yeah. And he's a guy that just completely flipped it.
Is it Trevor Prangley or something that he fought?
Could be.
Babalu or one of those Jeremy Horn.
Babalu's a hitman in Santa Ana. Hitman 3. And it says no results. It's almost like they just had these fights in a backyard.
We got to get Tito on to ask him that question. What the hell?
Was it his event?
Wasn't it his?
I think it had something to do with those punishment guys. But we showed up to the Galaxy Theater in Santa Ana. We watched fights.
With good fighters on it.
Yeah, like Gustavo Machado, who was a Huas guy, you know, and Chael and a few others, maybe Horn. I forget. We were there. We saw some fights. The night happened. But yet, you can't find it in the books other than just Chael was there, but, like, the results and all. I mean, I'll see if I can find it maybe in the next break. But it's almost like it wasn't a sanctioned event or something. Mm-hmm.
Remember, you could eat food? We were eating food, like pizza and shit, and they were right there. We were just watching it.
And the old Galaxy Theater was where they used to have the 1990 sensational super club called Club Rubber. Club Rubber, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. That was pimp and ho.
Club
to the T, and so that was
no glove,
something else.
No love.
Yeah. All right, look, we'll play a couple of these when we come back. Let's reset things a little bit right now. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 156. Stay close. We'll be right back.
Club.
DJ Khaled. We the best season as return.
Cause I'm out here grinding.
I do this for the streets, the runners.
Cause I'm out here grinding.
They were abducted by aliens and instantly returned for raiding all their snacks. They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
Well, I told you all we might get a surprise visitor in the studio. We have him, one of the top managers in the sport of mixed martial arts. A manager to stars like Rose Namajunas, Paul Felder, Carla Esparza, Willie Zhang, Dan Ige, Merced Bektik. The list goes on and on. A lot of killers over there. Mm-hmm. It's Brian Butler from Sucker Punch Entertainment. What's up, Brian? How you doing?
Pretty good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I had a feeling we're going to see you a lot this summer because of that Dana White Contender Series.
Yeah, I'm going to be – I haven't been in Vegas in a while, but I'm going to be here a lot over June and July, actually. So.
Yeah. Is this an event that you've, like, come to like in terms of placing your young talent?
Yeah, I like it. You know, we get a lot of guys on there. We've gotten a lot of guys on the show from there, like Boston and Dan
Boston
and
Salmon,
stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah, so it's been good for us.
Are you going to go back to South Carolina for Dan's fight? Will you make it in time? Or?
Well, I live in driving distance, so the plan is to go back and drive up there. But mm-hmm. I've literally drove back. Well, got back from New York from Bellator, and then straight to here, and then hopefully back to there. So. We'll see. I'm going to try.
Logging the miles, huh?
I'm trying, yeah.
Today's only Tuesday, though, so you got time to figure all that out, right?
Right, but I'd leave here Wednesday.
Okay.
And then get in the car.
And I had that right? Willie Zhang's part of the team.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Got that title fight against Jessica Andrade.
Yep. It's going to be a crazy one.
That surprised me a little bit. I don't know. Did that catch you? Were surprised, or is that something you guys were working on? I mean,
I knew she was going to be in line for a title soon. Like she was like Weili's very, very good.
Right.
I didn't know that it would be that soon. You know, it was the option was there for Rose to take the rematch, and you know, the timeline wasn't working out that that Rose wanted to get back in that quick. And
in China, they would have wanted that.
No.
I
think they just wanted to get something going, and this window opened up in China, which was a good fit for the UFC because they're obviously trying to expand and grow their business over there. So
right, and I wasn't as upset. For one, Zhang is a stud. All right,
she's
like 20-1 or 19-1.
Yeah,
plus I've cashed a couple parlays. Thank her for me when you see her. However, I just felt like Tatiana was kind of like the pole position, right? So when she won, I thought, ooh, I think she's going to get that shot. Now, she revealed that she had hurt her neck and a few other things. But then when I saw the booking, I was like, well, again, Zhang undefeated in the UFC, formidable record, and there's a big movement going into China. I can see how this makes sense. And since then, Suarez has done some interviews anyway, and it doesn't seem to be a big ruffling of the feathers. Because on this show, a lot of times what happens is it's the Conor McGregor effect. There's so many fighters that are like, deserving of a shot, and then when it doesn't happen, I'm like, yeah, but you know, we erupt. But for that one in particular, nobody really erupted. We just said, okay, yeah, good, sounds good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's gonna be, and in China too. I mean, she's gonna explode. You know, it's gonna be a hell of a fight.
How do you even manage an athlete from China? Like, how do you even know how to market her, or do you have a like an affiliate or a franchiser or are you an expert
we had
in Asian?
A good friend of mine, Scott Sheely, was already working over there, and he kind of referred her our way, and you know, it just worked out fine. I was born in Hong Kong, so I'm half Chinese, and you know,
is she super popular over there or not yet?
You know. When I was there, I didn't really notice it that much. I mean, I noticed a little bit, but it was a lot of foreigners that were stopping her to take pictures, not a lot of local people.
Okay.
But we'll see. You know, I think obviously if she becomes a champ over there, it'll be a different story.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I was going to ask something similar because I'm like, yeah, I really don't see many people working with the Chinese fighters. I'm pretty sure Faber, I don't know him himself or his gym has something there. So I'll see some fighters kind of cross-train. I know Jackson Wink, they've taken a few of the Chinese fighters over, but aside from that, obviously yourself, we all know what a great stable you do and how you handle them. But, yeah, we really don't see too many
Asian fighters. Do you think we're going to see more of that, whether it be under your management or other management, more making that integration
for sure,
over to
for
Western?
Sure. Have you seen the PI that they just opened up there? It's nicer than the PI here.
Wow. Five times bigger.
I didn't know that, but it just from the pictures that my friends are posting, it's huge. So, and there's a lot of people moving and working in there, so, you know, I'm sure it'll come up.
Yeah, and you know, when the Olympics come around, I always talk about the gold medals. U.S., you'll find them on top. And this is winter or summer. Mm-hmm. Russia, but guess who's right there, man? China produces a lot of great athletes. And one time when I was touring, when Mark Ratner gave me a tour, mm-hmm. He goes, oh, don't mind the Chinese rowing team or something like that. They're going to be, you know, they're moving around or whatever. And I'm telling you, man, it was a women's rowing team. And there were some specimens walking around. Like, I was looking, I'm going, they're rowers? And he goes, yeah, I think it was rowers. And I go, dude, they look like they could be fighters. Like, if they're that well put together, I can only imagine once they get the coaching there and get their hands on some of the athletes that can become fighters. I'm telling you, man, you guys would have been like, whoa. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I saw some of the conditioning they were doing. They're just very, very strong and fit and, like, driven, you know what I mean? There was no like I'm on Instagram or nothing like that. Okay, coach, what's the next thing I needed to do? But yeah. I guess there's a lot of teams or countries that are so enamored with and impressed by the UFC PI, they'll actually go in there and reserve a time and work there.
Yeah, their mentality is different. I mean, have you seen Weili train?
Like, no.
She's a machine. Like, even Jens Pulver was telling me the other day, he was tripping out because he called me up laughing. He's like, man, he's like, she even trains her toes. He's like, what fighter trains their toes?
How does she do that?
She was posting some workout that she was doing for her feet or something. And that girl.
Now, with all due respect, that might be a bit much, right?
It's,
the toes?
Listen, she's trained.
Movement?
And you know what? Feet. Huh?
She's staying on her toes. She's bouncing. She's explosive. Yeah. Okay. You know, she's doing all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, but she's, you know, everybody keeps saying that Jessica is this powerhouse, and she is, but I promise you Weili will be able to match her strength. Yeah, that's a powerful girl.
She seems like an athlete. Like, I was right in line with you as far as the explanation of the title shot. It's not that it caught people by surprise, because there's even people like myself, I said on this show before, Tatiana Suarez for sure is the person to look at, but coming up the division, but right behind her is a Weili Zhang, and I think we saw that play out.
Yeah, we just redid our contract for her after she fought Tisha, and we already had built in the champion clause in it, because we knew at least within this contract she would probably get a shot.
And may I ask, where is she training primarily, and is she doing any kind of crossover to America or just all China right now?
She actually did a little bit of time at Jackson's for a little. She came early for her fight and went there for a bit, but other than that, she's at Black Tiger in China, and she just does all of her training there. It's a little camp, and you know, she's beating the heck out of all of her coaches there, and you know.
Well, the jiu-jitsu, the wrestling, the striking, like she checks all the boxes. Like, I haven't seen something that she hasn't done yet. Like, off her back on top. Yeah, the feet. Yeah.
Okay, I did want to go back to one thing you said. It's almost like you unraveled it, and I don't know if you meant to, but you said they actually went to you guys for Rose.
Yeah.
So does that answer the question that she's not looking to retire just yet? She's actually considering offers or continuing her career?
Yeah, Rose will be back, and she'll be back when she...
That's great to hear.
When she comes back on her own terms, she's going to be, she's going to be phenomenal. And that fight with Jessica, you know, she was showing it like
she looked like an artist.
You know, yeah, she was.
Her jab, her striking, her footwork, her head movement,
everything is
she
perfect.
She looked great. And even when the first couple times Jessica was engaging or she was doing stuff that was messing with the now champ, but the challenger at the time. And that was the actual slam. Now, granted, Andrade made some adjustments, but wow! I mean, I just wasn't expecting that because of the time off, and she was fighting in Brazil. It just seemed like so many things were going against her, but she looked great. And so I thought
she's deceptively
strong. She's probably
strong
just
too.
A little shook up because she just lost the fight. But please don't retire, Rose, because man, like your best years are still ahead of you.
Yeah, she's still so young, and she's just getting better and better. She's hyper talented, and she's just somebody that is hard not to love. You know, Rose is a great human being, and she carries herself like a champion.
All right, I'm going to move on to Bellator. Would you have any questions, guys?
Well, no, I just wanted to ask you about that. The Was it almost like a weight lifted off her back? Because we see this used to happen a lot in boxing when somebody, a younger person, would win a title, and just everything that comes with being the champion and all the publicity. Some fighters just don't like that as much as others. And I felt like when she lost, I felt bad because I thought she was fighting a perfect fight up until that moment. But in a way, I was happy in the sense that I feel like now she can kind of chill and be her for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I think she felt a weight off of her as well, because if she even said if she, you know, she knows she can win that fight, you know, first and foremost. But she said even if she won it, she would have had the, she would have felt like, okay, what's next, time to defend this and this, and she wouldn't have ever given herself at least the mental break that she needed to do it. And, you know, she had a, she had an injury going, you know, prior to that fight as well, and then, you know, after it now, she just wants to get herself back to 100%, and you know, we're all very confident that, you know, she'll be back. She's already kind of said it, but, you know, we're just going to let her tell us.
So what took you to New York? Just you were there as a fan, or did you have a fighter going?
So I had Ricky Bendejas fighting. And it was my son's last day of school, and I called up Mike Kogan. I said, listen, I was like, I was going to surprise my son, bring him up there. You know, if you can get me good tickets, I'll come. And he got me his great seats, first row, and went up there, watched Ricky's fight. That didn't go our way. And then I also wanted to see, I was, you know, Douglas Lima was there with me. I wanted to see who he was going to face. It was, you know, Neiman or Rory. And it's going to be the rematch that everybody wanted. So I think it played out perfectly.
Did you ever think that when you started in this sport, I mean, I'm sure you did, but, you know, $1 million payouts, man. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's crazy. And not even, you know, and multiple of them, you know, PFL, Bellator now, and Bellator's getting ready to do another one. Yeah. And, you know, it's...
And then your champions.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't know what the whole climate's going to be now with ESPN. I'm hearing there's still pay-per-views. It's just maybe not selling as much, but there's still pay-per-view and pay-per-view
I think
bonuses.
It's just a learning curve. You know, it's kind of like Netflix, you know, like it. I just over the past 2 years started watching Netflix, and I'm not trying to use Dana's lines or agree with them, but I think there's a learning curve, and I think eventually all people are going to be subscribing to online viewing stuff like that and watching things through. It's just as long as they make the apps easy. Right now, the ESPN Plus thing is, I was getting frustrated.
I was getting frustrated with DAZN earlier.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it'll get there.
As long as they get it smoothed out to where it's just one click and I can go to multiple TVs and all that stuff, I'll be fine. But
one championship ain't having problems though, right?
No, everything they do for some reason seems to just click right away.
Their app is badass.
Here's what it is. There's the app itself and the streaming of the event, but there's this whole part too that no one's even touching yet, and that's having to go and search. It's like seven clicks, for example, for a DAZN or and whatnot. And I don't know if you ever face this as a manager, you know, you got to be at a lot of places. Your fighters are a lot of places. Maybe you can't watch a fight live. Maybe you find yourself too, Brian, having to go backtrack. And that, for me, is the hard part I have with apps, trying to go back.
And then I don't like that you can't DVR it anymore. Like, you know, I would always DVR the pay-per-view. Yeah, even if I was at the live event, I would still DVR it at home so I could go back and watch it and see how it sounded with the commentators. Mm-hmm. Now can you do that? Maybe I'm wrong.
I think once... If you bought it, can you go back and...
He's right, because how would you be able to do it? You're DVRing your satellite programming or your cable
programming.
But
I have DVR boxes in my closets just because I don't want to get rid of certain Pride events and stuff like that.
You got the
TiVo?
Really?
Yeah. I have a TiVo with, with some of the last Prides on it.
The little noise.
Yeah, that was awesome. And that's the thing with smart TVs. Now you don't even need the external thing. Like when I was ordering the pay-per-views just prior to this ESPN launch, it would say... Do you want to buy it, or do you want to stream it, or do you want to stream and record it for later? And it would give you that option, and like, so you're killing two birds with one stone. So that was always nice. But now, obviously, we're all doing things through in-app now, so you don't really have that DVR-ish kind of like Ryan said, as far as recording it, so you have it the next day.
Lima and McDonald. It looks like they're going to wait till maybe November. It looks like McDonald's asking for additional time. Do you have any insight on that?
I heard that night Douglas was kind of, you know, upset about it. You know, he wants to get it over with and get it done with, and that is the matchup that he was actually hoping would end up happening for him.
Really? Why is that?
He wants
avenge
that rematch with Rory. He knows he could have won that first fight as well, and he just wants it bad. Douglas is such a nice guy. Did you see the thing that I posted about him the night of the fight?
Yeah, that was nice. That was
blown away. He's just honestly the most humble, nicest champion fighter ever. I mean, he never talks trash. You have to really, you know, twist his arm to make him talk any trash, and he still won't do it. But the night of the fight, we were already late to head over to the arena, and you know, he told me to come up because Jacau was taking a long time to get ready. Sorry, Jacau. People always make fun of him on being on Brazilian time. But we were walking to the arena, and this lady, you know, I turned around at the stoplight and looked back, and Douglas is like 15 yards back, and this lady was talking to him. So I was just like, come on, Douglas, we're late. I went back to get him, and I couldn't tell what the lady was saying, and Douglas was like, I think she's thirsty, you know, and I was like, she's thirsty. I was like, Douglas, come on. I was like, something seemed off, and he wouldn't leave. He's like, no, he's like, something's out. He's like, I'm going to get her a drink. I'm like, all right, let's go. So he opens the door to the diner, goes up to the lady, and he's like, I'd like to get her a table, you know, get her a drink, get her a menu. She ordered a full meal, drink, made sure she had a table, paid for everything up front before we went over, headed over to the arena. This lady was, she didn't look homeless, because, you know, she had a purse, she was, you know, all the stuff, she was just walking, but she just looked out of it. I don't know if there was something wrong with her or,
wow.
But he's just a nice guy. And then he didn't know that I was taking pictures, but I was like, I had to, because I was like, this is just weird. My son was with me. I was, you know, setting a good example. So I just started taking a couple of pictures, and I want people to know that that's the type of guy Douglas is, because he's so quiet and so humble that he'll never say anything for himself. And I hope that once he wins this tournament, that Bellator is really going to get behind him and push him, because he is exactly what an MMA champion should be.
Very cool. Give us the timeline for Felice. Where's she at? She just had surgery on her ACL, correct?
She did. She's had her first week of rehab, and she gave me an update today. She says it's still pretty painful because she chose instead of a cadaver part, she chose a part of her own, I guess. Mm. I don't know what that means. I guess
she's full of herself, huh?
They took a ligament from herself or something.
Yeah.
So that makes it more stressful or painful or something like that. But she's, you know, she's saying it's rough, but she's a durable girl. She'll, as soon as she gets over this first hump, I believe she'll be fine. But we need to pray for her boyfriend Patrick, because Felice, she's gonna need a lot of bell ringing.
I'm going on a little rapid fire here, but Jens Pulver, another year goes by, no UFC Hall of Fame. Have they ever told him? Just no, it's not going to happen, or is
no,
it just a matter of?
As a matter of fact, Dana said it was going to happen, so I don't know when. So we're just waiting. You know, I brought Jens to Vegas twice,
okay,
to have meetings with. You know, Dana once was the initial meeting for them to just, you know, talk. I guess they hadn't talked in years, and there's some they've got a long history together, and that was a really cool meeting because him and Dana just sat around, and it was supposed to be like a 15-minute meeting, but him and Dana just sat around for like 45 minutes, just telling stories of like how Jens used to sleep on the floor of the private jet when they'd fly somewhere, this and that, like just a lot of funny stuff. And both of them, I feel, got emotional in that meeting at the end, and it was a good meeting. And then the second meeting was when Jens brought his original belt back.
That was, I remember cool, that.
Yeah, I like that belt.
To you know, so to the UFC headquarters. Wow. So, and at that point, Dana was saying, "Yeah, it'll happen. It's just, I guess, whenever."
I realize that there's other athletes, and so the good thing is they haven't told them, look, we thought about it, but you just don't fit whatever criteria it is.
The only reason Jens is even pushing, not even pushing it, but, you know, I was the one that was telling him, you're deserving of this, you know. I was
he
like,
is.
Don't act like you're not. Don't act like you don't want it. I mean, it should be there. I mean,
he's a godfather of the younger, the lighter weight classes, you know, whether we want to say lightweight, because that's what they had at the time, or just spurning on.
He's like the godfather of sucker punch now, too. All the girls that were out with the It's a 10, Super 10 thing that we had in Florida, Jez was like the uncle, just chaperoning everybody around. I mean, he's a great guy.
Nice. You know,
and everybody loves him, so yeah, he's due.
All right, we got Brian Butler here chilling with us. Can we keep you for another segment?
You
going to be all right? Or
yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm watching the clock because I know you need to be somewhere at 7, but I think we're pretty close to where you need to go.
Cool.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, good?
Yep.
All right, folks, it's the top of the hour break. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, channel 156. Now, look, I'm not going to lie to you. This isn't the one-minute variety one. We just shifted the commercials around a little bit. So please don't touch that dial. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Chael Sonnen, the American gangster who retired this past Saturday.
My life be like, ooh, yeah.
my life be like, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, yeah, ooh.
Good, you're still here. The boys were just getting warmed up. Now the real show begins. Take it away, boys.
Man, that first hour was nothing. Now the real show's going to start. Yeah. We've got Brian Butler, MMA manager extraordinaire, here in studio with us. Also be joined by Rob Font in about 20 minutes, followed up by Lyoto Machida after Rob Font. So, Brian, you were in New York. The American Gangster retired in front of your own eyes. It caught a few people by surprise. But then when you look back and say that, you know, he's now, I think, 42 years old and he's put in his time. I mean, this guy started in 97, so he's gone through that, I don't want to call it NHB era, but the first era of MMA.
Kind of was, wasn't he?
Well, prior to 93, I guess we would say there was actual no rules. You could probably bite someone if you wanted to. But regardless, I mean, he's been around. And I wanted to get you. I want to ask you a question. What did you think of the announcement, and do you have any personal stories with Chael at all throughout your career? You guys ever cross paths?
Not really. We've bumped into each other here and there, but I'm not really the type of manager that goes up and tries to push myself in front of people that I don't know or other people's clients and stuff like that. So I've said hi to him a few times. We've met each other a couple times at Bellator's and stuff like that, but I never have, you know, approached him in any ways. But you know, he seems like a great guy. His act is awesome. You know, I think he's going to be a beloved guy. He can go from the guy that everybody hates to the guy that everybody loves, like on a turn of a dime. So I feel like, you know, he's going to be kind of like a Jens Pulver as he gets older. People are just going to, you know, like him for being who he is. I feel like Cowboys is going to also kind of be that way. You know, he's just going to be one of those endearing people. So
looking over at your roster throughout the years, I would feel like Chael would have stood out over some of those people, the way he would conduct himself and just how out there he was. Your fighters are generally a little bit more reserved. And would he have been a guy that you would want to have managed during his runs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't manage people, you know. I mean, some of them, if I don't...
Like, would have been difficult?
No, I think it would have been fun, you know. Because he's not a dick, you know, but he just knows how to play to the camera. Can I say that on...
Yeah.
I mean, he just knows how to play, you know, he knows how to play it up. And he's a good promoter, so... And he's a great talker. I think he's a great analyst and commentator and all that stuff as well, so... Anyway, he's going to have plenty of work.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the main event between Roy McDonald and Neiman Gracie and the co-main event between Lyoto and Chael?
The co-main event kind of went kind of how I thought it was going to go. You know, Lyoto is still extremely dangerous. Not that Chael isn't, but I still think Lyoto is, you know, he's dangerous. The main event, Douglas and I were texting the whole time. either way, whoever would have won that fight, we would have been.
Would it have been marketable, Lima Gracie final? Just that name, Gracie, does it carry that type of weight?
I don't think it carries it as much as the rematch with him and Rory. Because the rematch with him and Rory, you see Douglas and Rory took a picture together, and Rory was just laid up in a hospital bed, and Douglas was just smiling beside the bed, and, you know, sportsmanship and all that stuff. But that's a fight that I think people would want to see. And, you know, there was, you know, it looked like there was still some holes. I don't know Rory. I don't know where Rory's mind is going to be, you know. I was concerned looking at his face at the beginning of the fight that he didn't seem like he even wanted to be in the cage. But sure enough, as soon as the fight started, he started doing Rory. So
what about Dylan Danis? Too much, too soon? Or do you like his shtick?
I don't know him. I don't know him, so I feel like maybe his shtick is just a shtick, kind of like how Chael's was, you know. And kudos to him for having it. But I think he's biting off a lot. I think a good match would be him and Neiman. I'd like to see that. Uh-huh. You know, but he hasn't really been tested yet. You know, kind of like MVP. I think they're bringing him up kind of like MVP, like slowly putting him into the deep end. And
right.
And MVP turned out to be able to hang, so.
And none of us have really talked about Aaron Pico, but this happened while the show was happening.
Hyper-talented kid right there.
I think he's talented, too, from what I see. But, wow, that chin's just been touched. And I just think he just needs time, man. I don't even care if it's one of those where he's gone 18 months. You know me, after 9, I'm like, the ring rust, the timing. But yeah. At this point, like, just let that.
How old is he? He's
let
young,
that
right?
Grand Prix mm-hmm. play out and come back, win a key fight or two, and then let's see what you got.
He changed camps. He's done the adjustments. If you watch the fight, he did what a lot of people wanted him to do, and that's wrestle. And he was successful with it. But you're right. He just needs to rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, his boxing is his hands are good too.
I mean,
that kid has got a lot of talent, and people say he doesn't deserve to be there. I think he definitely does, but he might need to take some time to just make sure he's completely clear.
Did you catch that one, Dan?
He's got time. His age, you guys asked. He's 22 years old still,
jeez,
guys.
Yeah, he's so young.
Time is something he's got.
Yeah, he needs to back away. This featherweight Grand Prix is going to start later this year. It's 16 deep. That's going to take about a year, year and a half to play out. Why even be a part of it? You know what I mean? Those are just four fights you don't need right now. Sure, it'd be nice to win a Grand Prix and maybe, fight for that mill. Mm-hmm. But I just think right now, man, it's your health and then the longevity of your career. Let all that play out and then come back, and maybe you're the guy that wins a key fight or two and that you're fighting that guy, the winner of that tournament. I don't know.
That's going to be a fun tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're running out of time here with Brian. But I want to include him in today's daily debate. So if you guys are ready, it's going to stick with the Bellator 222 theme. I think you guys will like it.
The brothers Garcia seemingly can't agree on anything.
Everybody knows it's duck season.
Rabbit season.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Whether it's food.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Gambling.
Always bet on black.
I like red.
Black.
Red.
Black.
Red.
Black, dummy.
Or even social media.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
The same applies to the biggest stories in MMA. Time for MMA Junkie Radio's Daily Debate.
Today's daily debate question for the at MMA Junkie Radio team and MMA manager Brian Butler from Sucker Punch Entertainment. At Bellator 222, Chael Sonnen retired and Fedor Emelianenko announced his return. Who made the right call? Dan, lead off.
I don't want to say right or wrong when it comes to a fighter, another man, etc.'s career. That's not mine. But if I got to weigh in on this, guys, I'm going to go and elect that I think as far as right call, I say Sonnen only because Fedor, I don't know what we're going to do here. I mean, sure, we're doing some really interesting things. That props to Scott Coker and Saki Kibara. All the possibilities now, cross-promotion we're starting to see. I don't see those possibilities in Fedor's book. In fact, they're talking about a Rampage fight. I would rather see Rampage fight someone like a Shogun Hua. I know they're in different organizations and weight class, but that rematch has made sense so many times in the past and still does. Whereas I don't know if a Fedor one does. The only person I want to see Fedor fight, guys, is a guy named Randy Couture, but that had its chance, and that was all the way back in 2007. Mm-hmm. So that ship has sailed, so mark me down for Just Sonnen on that one.
Just Sonnen. All right, how about you guys?
I think when you're looking at fighters towards the end of their career.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on one second. The choices are Emelianenko, Sonnen, both or neither. Mm. So you don't have to pick just one or the other.
Okay.
And I apologize for interrupting you.
Don't interrupt me again.
All right. Ooh.
I think when you look at these fighters and you see them at the end of their careers, some of them you sit there and you wonder, well, why are they doing it, right? And some of those guys are guys that don't really have an avenue after fighting. Chael Sonnen's not that guy. If anything, he's a great analyst. He's got a successful podcast show. I mean, he's got things he can do. He doesn't need to fight. So I think it's the right answer for him to walk away right now and to do it on his terms.
Mm-hmm. Brian, what do you think?
I agree. He's got a lot of stuff going on outside the cage that he's really good at. The analyst, the commentating. Bellator's keeping him busy with a bunch, so I think that was the best call for him.
What about Fedor re-signing? Should he have done that?
I'm not for or against it, but Fedor, the type of fight that I feel he puts on, I feel like he can still put that on. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's like some grappling, like jujitsu wizard where he's doing all these dynamic, he likes to stand there and punch you,
Right.
And he's still got the pop. So, the only thing is he's got to be careful about getting popped by another big heavyweight guy. And that's the fear all of them have. So,
and that's what we don't know. And again, it all comes back down to those neurological tests. If they're all going back after each fight like a responsible professional, paying the $500 or $700, whatever it costs, I've heard different prices, up to $2,000, but these guys make good money, and they're okay. They remember their kids' names, their birthdays, their peripheral vision's still there. I'm telling you, man, these are the fights that pay you the most. I got to imagine Fedor makes a mil per fight?
You would think so.
Right? I mean, this guy's just been negotiating big contracts for a while. Am I right, Brian? You have a better idea? $500,000?
He's making a lot of money.
Okay, so, but, and Chael probably a quarter of a mil, maybe, just to show.
But there's a lot of heavyweights that he can still beat. You know, heavyweights.
Right.
I mean, it's a popular division, but, you know, there's a lot of heavyweights that I'm sure that Fedor could still beat. Because there's a lot of heavyweights that are, you know, not that.
Chael does
athletic.
His podcast is blowing up, and he's got the work with ESPN. But you know what? He's never far from a title shot. And it seemed like he's so consumed with that promise to his dad that I thought, don't retire. Just hover. Take a break. You know what I mean? Chael out here or there. And then if there's an opportunity for you to jump in there, I'm telling you, man, this guy's so committed to his wrestling. And if he can get you down, he's just trouble for a lot of the guys that are more striking-based. But, hey, man, after two knees, it could be like he was thinking, oh, you know, my bell is wrong. I don't need this shit anymore. Mm-hmm. So I will side with both. Made the right call.
Yeah. You're going to side with both?
Yeah.
See, with Fedor Emelianenko, I would prefer
checked out. But, you know,
I'd prefer him not fight. But if he is, I'm happy that he went this route in signing a long-term contract with Bellator, because I think what hurt Fedor before was when he didn't know if he really wanted to come back, and he'd take one at a time, fall out of training camp, gain some weight, do whatever, then come back, fight again. Mm. He's the best Fedor Emelianenko when he's set, I'm going to be a mixed martial artist, and he trains. Camp, fight, little break, camp, fight. That's when he's been his most impressive. So I'm kind of happy. I kind of want to side with you now, but I think I'm still going to stick with my pick of Sonnen.
All right. Well, this is how the results came in. 75% just said Sonnen made the right call. He retired this past Friday after the fight with Lyoto Machida. And a distant second place was both, so meaning Fedor re-signing, and Sonnen retiring. And then in third place was neither, so 8% said Sonnen shouldn't have retired and Fedor shouldn't have come back. And then 7% said Fedor made the right call by returning and thereby disagreeing with Sonnen's return. So it was a little bit of a twist and turn type of question, but almost 1,000 votes came in. Thank you to Junkie Nation, the listeners of the show, and the readers of the site for participating. All right. So, Brian, I know you got to get going. Who are your horses that are running tomorrow night? Do you have one, two? Puna. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so
Puna. He was just on your show, right?
Yeah, Soriano. Yeah. I didn't know if there was anybody else.
No. Puna is tomorrow, and that guy is...
Such a nice fella, isn't he?
So nice. Too nice. He's like a big teddy bear, but, man, when he fights, he is violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He is putting people to sleep.
Story so. Time, right? That's why he puts people to sleep.
Puts people to sleep. Yeah.
What about the Big Tuna? Was that ever in the running for a nickname?
I have nothing to do with their nicknames. So yeah, I don't know. Whatever he chooses.
Have you ever told a fighter, hey, you need to say this, act this way, coach them a little bit?
Yeah, you for sure. Up? We'll go over, you know, details on, you know, before fights on media and stuff like that on what we want to, you know. Because fighters can get emotional, and sometimes they want to say the same type of crap that I want to say sometimes, but I realize that I got to hold back sometimes, and, you know, we want to try to take the high road all the time, and, you know, I'll coach them a bit, and we'll coach them in interviews afterwards and stuff, so if they want to listen to me, they can. If they don't, they don't.
If you're there on check-in day, and the fighter goes, hey, Brian, you want to corner me? Is that more music to your ears than the guy saying, I already got my corners, thereby you just get to enjoy the fight in the stands? What do you like better? Just going there and sitting there as a fan and watching it all play out, or wearing the Reebok tracksuit, doing the walkout, which you've done plenty of times, and I don't know if it ever gets old or not. What's your
ideal scenario? The walkout is always exciting, so it's always cool to do. And I, you know, if the fighter wants me there, then I'll be there. If they don't, then it's still the same kind of anxiety for me. If I'm in the locker room, I'll be sitting there, and my knees will be bouncing. If I'm sitting in the seat, my knees will be bouncing. So,
you ever gotten in the cage out of all them times?
Yeah. It's cool. It's one of the cool parts is that I get to do that type of stuff, and then sometimes I get to train with them, and, you know, I got to train with Jens at my house a couple weeks ago. You know, little things like that are cool little perks. But
what's the most nervous you've ever been? Big John McCarthy always talks about his heart rate. He keeps it low, but he can tell that a lot of people, whether they're a cut man or an announcer or this or that, their heart is just pounding.
It's I'll probably get a little more nervous if I'm in the corner with them, and the guy will come out and say, "All right, 10 seconds, we're walking." You know, that's when I'll be like, "Feels like you're on death row." You know,
I think we all would, right?
Yeah,
you'd be an odd individual if you didn't feel that way.
Though. Well, I got to be in Frank Trigg's corner, and my knees were buckling when Robbie Lawler knocked him out. That was scary, man. Yeah. That was scary.
Or if they're doing good and you slam the thing, then the commission yells at you for, you know, because if you get excited, you're watching.
Yeah, they always.
Are you on spit bucket duty when you go out?
I'm usually on.
Are you
like,
a post? No, they don't do posters anymore.
Don't do that. I used to be the best banner boy.
You were a banner guy. I remember that. You missed
now.
Those
I'm like, get this. Where are the flip flops? I just got the flip flops in the bucket.
You missed those days.
The banners, you know, I don't miss designing them. I used to actually design all of them, but. You know,
shoot us straight. Were you one of those guys that made more for your guys than what they get paid by Reebok now? Or can you say the Reebok deal is either fair or...
Look, I will say that it's not the Reebok deal. It's the amount of MMA. You know, back when in the early days when you're doing it, you had like 5-6 shows a year, 7 shows a year. And you were having these companies that had that yearly budget spread out over 7 shows. Now they got pretty much the same company with the same budget spread out over...
40 shows,
so they only want main card, and then they get to, you know, it's a sponsor's market right now, so I don't think Reebok is to blame. I think, honestly, right now, with the amount of MMA out there right now, that, you know, for the most part, the fighters are, you know, probably getting as much as they would with the way the market is, and I know everybody's going to slam me, oh, he sucks and this, but no, it's the truth. There's so much MMA out there right now, you can only spread dollars so far.
Let me ask it this way. Rose gets 40 grand because she's the champ, right?
Right.
Could you beat that?
Okay, so there are times where you could beat that.
Because she seems marketable.
Yeah, very, very. But she still has, Rose still has sponsors, okay. You know, outside of the cage right now that she doesn't have to wear them for. And it's forcing the sponsors to utilize them in their own marketing. So, you know, billboards, you know, commercials and this and that. So, whereas before everybody thought the big thing was just having the logo on the shorts. But... You know, I come from a marketing background, so I understand how to try to create ROI for the brands that are in the sport like that. And, you know, I honestly think it's just the amount of MMA that's out there right now. You've got Bellator, you've got PFL, you've got UFC, you've got LFA, you've got Titan. All, you know, sponsors they don't have enough money to push out to that many shows.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for stopping by. It's always fun to pick your brain. You're one of the best in the business.
Thank you.
Like I say, I really appreciate you. Came straight from the airport, and I know you're going to a dinner. So,
you guys always take care of me.
All right. Thanks, Brian, so much. And, folks, follow him on Twitter at BrianButler_AU. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Rob Font and Lyoto Machida back-to-back. So don't touch that dial. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 156.
Out in the street, they call it murder.
If you cross them, they will destroy you. Just ask Three Finger Eddie and Pete the Penguin. Who are they, you ask? My point exactly. They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
All right, fellas.
Don't you feel like Rob would know Three Finger Eddie and Pete the Penguin?
Yeah, those Boston guys, they'd be doing some dirt out there, so yeah. I'm sure they ran into that type of a shady character. But how about when you say Rob Font and John Lineker, and you know you're confining them in a cage. I mean, that's a barn burner fight, right? I can't wait for that one on Saturday. It takes place on Saturday in Greenville, South Carolina, and it's UFC on ESPN plus 12, and Rob Font joins us now on the hotline. What's up, Rob? How you doing?
What's up, boys? How you doing?
Good, man. Back on with George and Goes. We got Dan Tom with us as well, our fight analyst, and we're anxious to talk to you. And guess what? You're on the other side of the country, so I can make fun of you guys. Thought you were hard, huh? You thought you were going to hang up another banner. What, the Red Sox in the fall, the Patriots in the winter, and you thought you were going to hang one up here in the spring with the Bruins. But, hey, man, you can't have it all, Rob Font. Take that. And you know what? Tell Calvin Kattar I said the same stuff. Boston sucks.
That was tough to watch, man. That was a blowout, too.
Dude, what happened, Rob? You guys were coming home. Home ice advantage. You guys should have whooped them. You guys won 7-2. 5-1. It was all there right for the pickings. I thought my goose was cooked. I'd have to hear your guys when you come to town for these Dana White Contender Series. I think that's on the agenda for you guys. And it didn't happen. I couldn't believe it. I really thought they were going
to
do it.
That was his last chance because now Anthony Davis is coming to the Lakers.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking smack for years now.
I know. It was tough to watch, man. But I forgot the kid's name, though. The kid on St. Louis. I forgot his name. But he that kid that was scoring all those damn goals, he's actually from New Hampshire. So, you know, we got a little win up there, you know.
Well, that's kind of a little bit of a stretch, but we'll give it to you. We don't want to push our luck and take leg kicks in a couple of weeks here. Hey, man, tell me about Calvin, your teammate, getting a win at UFC 238 and just how much that lifts you. I know that's your partner in crime, but I got to imagine if the saying is true, you're more nervous for your teammates, your buddies when they fight, then, hey, it's got to match it on the other side as well. You're super happy, right? I mean, it raises your spirits up, too, when they win. Even though you didn't go in there and perform, you were right there.
Of course, I was sitting there in the stands, super nervous. Once I started seeing him land his jab, I mean, I'm sorry, that one jab that kind of stumbled along us a little bit. I was like, all right, you know, I'm good. I know we're good. And then you saw it, man. He started fading him. He got that long frame and all that. I'm saying, like, once he put that he touched him with the jab and add the hook and the cross to it, it was over, man. You saw what happened, and he beat a guy in Lamas. You know, he's been there, done that, fought everybody. He beat him in his hometown. The crowd was obviously against him, and he came out with the flawless victory. I couldn't sleep that night. I was so happy. But yeah, man, Calvin Kattar, man, shout out to him. Hopefully he comes back. I think I heard a rumor they're coming back to Boston soon, and hopefully, he can main event it. I go out there, finish the job, and Leonard can. I'll be the co-main event. So, trying to do the damn thing.
Will he be at your fight?
Yeah, he'll be here. We leave tomorrow morning. He'll be there for sure.
Nice. What does the other guy do for the guy that's fighting? I mean, I don't want to say something as derogatory as like "that's my bitch" or nothing like that. But I mean, what do you do? What kind of duties do you just put up with because the other guy's in? Focus and. And ready to
everything.
Go to,
the simple things from like, making sure the room's clean, making sure he had pretty much I'm carrying his bags, I'm carrying his water, making sure he's obviously staying hydrated, eating his food, I'm picking up his meals from perfecting athletes. I'm sitting there making sure I'm also reading the room. If you can tell like maybe he wants to be left alone, I'm sitting outside in the hallway or. Or, if people are, saying kind of being too loud or there's too many people around trying to gain people out or, little things. But it's definitely the bitch work, but it goes both ways. And he's going to be doing the same thing for me. And obviously,
so you could be,
as well,
Right. In South Carolina, when you get to the room, it could be like 3 a.m. and you could say, man, this pillow ain't right. Go downstairs and give me another one, Calvin. Now, he has to do it. That's the rule.
He'll do it with a smile. We both will do it with a smile. Because we understand how the little. It's weird because sometimes on fight week the little things kind of bother you sometimes. Like it's the weirdest thing ever. But it's different every time too. You just kind of go with the flow. It's different for everybody else. Like I was out there with Randy Costa in Atlanta, and it was a little different with him. He was a little more. A little more relaxed, and then when I go out like the local shows with the younger kids, it's a total different ball game. But Calvin Kattar, I think we got it. We know each other well, and it's not much that I have to do as far as like trying to figure him out. But occasionally he'll throw an oddball, change up in there, and I have to ride bitch and then do some dirty work. But that's my man. I'm ready to do that.
There you go. Rob Font is our guest. He's got a great fight coming up against John Lineker at UFC on ESPN Plus 12 on Saturday. They're in South Carolina. Main event that night, by the way, is the Korean Zombie and Hanato Moicano. All right, goes. What do you have for Rob Font?
Man, if there was like a Tinder friends app, I think I'd be swiping right now. And Rob, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
that's a pal right there.
It is a pal.
Because the battle.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what, Rob, when you gotta be 100 with us. He does that for you. You do that for him. But one of you has to be more of a diva. Which one is it?
I'm probably more of a diva.
You are?
I'm probably, yeah.
What's the most ridiculous thing you've ever asked him to do?
I let me think. I got to think about this one.
Because if you can't think of one, I think we're going to think of one. Because we'd love to send him on a journey and then have him come back and you just tell him, you know what, I didn't even really want it. The junkie guys were the ones that sent us.
Actually, you know what it was? I was like, I was a little cold in a room, right? I forgot what fight it was. I was a little cold and I wanted some sweatpants. And he went all the way to Walmart, got me some sweatpants. I ain't even wearing them. He paid his own money. I probably owe him still money for that. He paid for it and everything, and I didn't even wear the sweatpants. It was a fool. He was like, what the hell is that for? Yeah, I think that was like the biggest thing, but yeah.
That's a good one.
Rob, now, going over to the fight, when you watch video on John Lineker, is there one mistake? And you don't have to share exactly what it is, but is there one thing that you can at least point to in maybe his last four or five fights that his opponent has made against him? Is there like that one thing that you can go, that's what I can exploit right there?
But TJ, when he lost to TJ, it was more of like obviously the takedowns, and because he'll come real big with that lead hook, and TJ got underneath him very well. I think with the Sandhagen fight, he got to, you know, obviously the distance and making him touching him, kind of drawing him in and getting out the way was good, but then what I believe what he does best is kind of like getting guys to kind of back up. And I think, and obviously I felt it before, but I think guys don't realize like how explosive he is, and they just kind of lean back and pull out with the chin, and that's how you get caught. You saw it with like Brian Kelleher, you saw it with a couple other guys. But John Lineker, he's an animal in there, man. I'm glad I get to run it back.
Dan Tom, our fight analyst, he's got something for you. Dan, what do you have for Rob Font?
Yeah, what I guess up, Dan, man? Hey, what's up, Rob? And by the way, props on the walkout. In the Reebok era, it makes your song that much more important, you know, no matter how the night's going, gets everybody popping, and you the fighter, of course, and I got to give you props on that song, man. I love it. Every time you come on, I feel like I got to move, and you're doing your little shoulder shucks and jives on your way out. I feel it through the screen, man. It's infectious, so props to that.
Appreciate it, brother. Appreciate it.
And I don't want to step on too much of my colleagues' questions here, but I really do gotta, as a Rob Font fan and watching your progression through the UFC, I gotta ask you this question, because obviously this is a rematch. You lost the first time to Lineker. You were going to his home there in UFC 198, and you also lost to another Brazilian, Pedro Munhoz, a shorter guy bringing pressure. And I'm not trying to bring up two losses here, because I'll bring up two wins for you, Rob. Douglas Da Silva de Andrade and Thomas Almeida. The reason why I brought up those two wins and those two losses is because even though you have those two losses, I feel like you've beaten guys that have, whether it's like a short stature with knockout power like a Douglas Da Silva or a technical Muay Thai maelstrom like Thomas Almeida. I mean, you've been able to take care of these guys. So I from an outsider perspective, I don't know if it's a styles match, but what is the common thread as far as, you know, those two losses, and mainly the Lineker, the guy in question here, you're trying to get back.
Brazil,
was there any common thread there?
Brazil. I'm no good in Brazil, bro.
Okay, all right.
Honestly, with the Lineker fight, I was just out of that fight from the beginning. I don't know what it was. From the week, you know, in my mind, I really thought I wasn't gonna. Like, the crowd really wasn't gonna affect me, and I it was the hardest thing for me to admit, and it was like from the weigh-ins, I was overhyped. I was way too hyped up for no reason. You know, I don't usually, like, I was rapping my song the whole time. I don't rap. You know, I was running around the back room going all crazy. I was feeding into the crowd. You know, once they started chanting in my head, I was, man, fuck y'all guys, this is the net. You know, I just wasn't there. You know, I got lost focus so fast in that fight, where I remember seeing this green shirt and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I got Lineker swinging at me, and all I could see was a green shirt in the crowd. So, like, I was just not there mentally. You know, it was the hardest thing to do. And then in the Munhoz fight, you know, I was hitting him, I was doing my thing, and he got caught me, and I just panic wrestled. And obviously, you can't do that because, like I said, I was doing my thing. He caught me with an overhand right, I believe, and I just. He went, one second he was in front of me, next I couldn't see him, and when I finally saw him, I just shot, and it was a bad shot. You know, you don't do that with Pedro Munhoz, and I paid. But I think the most common thing was probably Brazil. But then again, like I said, it was two different fights. The Lineker fight hurt the most, as far as like, you know, I know I could have done better. The Munhoz fight, it was more of like learning. Okay, you know, if we get caught, we got to slow it down, cool it down. You know.
mentally get pulled together and you know not panic wrestle. I could have maybe clinched. I could have maybe even moved around a little bit more. But I panicked and I shot and I paid for it. But then you see like after the Lineker fight, I got that Douglas and Silva fight, which was a similar matchup. I did fine with that type of style, you know, the brawler. Right. And at that time, Douglas and Silva, I believe, was 24-1. Oh, and, yeah. You know, nobody wanted to fight him and all that. And, I put him away. So then, obviously, Thomas Almeida, you know, at one point he was supposed to be the next champ. And, you know, we saw what we did to Boston. So it was like, what, if I'm there mentally and I'm there and I'm not panicking, I'm not doing my, you know, I'm not, you know, spazzing for no reason or, you know, not, you know, not being myself, I guess you could say, I'm dangerous, man. You saw with the, you know, in that Pettis fight, you know, I was there. Like, I was, you know, I was, how do I say, like in those two fights, I wasn't ready to go 15 minutes. You know, I was in my mind, I was knocking everybody out. I was thinking I was going to catch guys and put them away. And it, you know, obviously, you got a guy like Lineker or Munoz, you know, you hit them and they laugh at you. Like, oh, all right, keep coming, you know. And I wasn't there. I'm ready to be there for 15 minutes just jabbing or, you know, landing my cross. And if I land it and he laughs at me, I got to land it again. I got to be able to do that for 15 minutes. And, you know, I'm ready for that. Also, like I said, in that Lineker fight, I wasn't ready to be, you know, get knocked out on TV. Like, that's another thing I couldn't admit. I wasn't ready to do it. I wasn't ready. All right, I got to go all in. Just, if I get caught, I get caught. Like, you know, obviously it's easy for me to say now, and but
right.
I think I'm ready now. I'm ready to say. I'm ready to get out there. I'm ready to, you know, obviously win however I have to win. But if I do end up being down two rounds, I'm just going to go out there and let it all out. And I get put on my back on TV, and then so be it, you know.
I love right, that, Rob. Dude. I love to that. Hear that.
Yeah. Go even the score up, man. Cannot wait for that fight, Rob, and we'll see you a couple weeks out here in Vegas. Thanks for the time, man. We'll keep it short because it's fight week, but we always appreciate catching up with you.
Thanks, Rob.
Appreciate it, guys. I'll see you soon.
All right, we'll see you. Rob S. Font on Twitter, Rob_Font on Instagram. And now we go from one superstar to the next. Lyoto Machida, former UFC light heavyweight champion, former UFC middleweight title contender, now a title contender at middleweight and light heavyweight. At Bellator MMA, it was Bellator 222 where he got the big win over Chael Sonnen, and he joins us now on the hotline. What's up, Lyoto? How you doing? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio.
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for talking to you. And
Lyoto, those knees. Moment. Those knees, my man. You know, you used to threaten them by, you know, from a standing position. And then just cocking back and, you know, and throwing them. But these, you were going straight up in the air. It was a thing of beauty. That was really, really a big difference maker in this fight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've trained this type of technique in knees for so long time, and especially for this fight, because I knew the way that Chael Sonnen could come. And he came the way that I thought. It was good because I could do my best. And I could jump so high and catch him in the air. I say like that.
What were you thinking after the first one, though, when Chael was able to get past that first knee and still stay in the fight? Was that in any way, I guess, did it not upset you, but, you know, like, did you think, man, I had this guy, and now all of a sudden he's coming back? So did it create any doubt, or were you able to just stay focused?
So after after the first round, because he could survive from a lot of punches on the ground, right. You know, from my ground pounds and my knee, because I hit so bad in the first round. Even Chael, right before the bell, you know, 10 seconds before the bell finished the first round, he said in my ear, "Lyoto, you hit so bad with that knee, man." That's why I smile a little bit.
I saw that,
and
yeah.
It was so good, but he could survive. I was impressed with his, you know, his condition, because he could come back and I could do it again in the second round. But in the second round, I put more pressure after the knee, and I could control the position and finish the fight with my ground pound. That was, for me, that was amazing, because, you know, it is my first fight when I finish in the ground pound with a lot of punches.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you stole the title shot from Victor Nemkov and Phil Davis and the other ones that have had some wins there over at Bellator, being that you're a former champion, You just got a finish in a high-profile fight at Madison Square Garden, and you have a win over the champion. Do you think you may have stolen the title shot from those guys?
For sure. I think this fight set me up for the next title shot. And it can be in both classes. Which comes first, I'll be ready. So I would like to be a champion. That's my goal here in Bellator. And I love being here in Bellator because I feel a lot of respect from the fans, from the president and everybody. And I still believe that I deserve that chance.
What do you prefer? Let's say he tells you, go ahead, Lyoto, you decide which title would you like to pursue? Which one would you go to first?
So I like to fight both. But, you know, in terms of cutting weight, because sometimes you have to cut a lot of weight, it's so hard. You know, in 185, you have to cut a lot of weight. In 205, I barely cut any weight. Just a couple pounds. I mean, like 10 pounds at most. So it's easily for me. It's going to be so easy for me. And I believe in everything is good for me. If I have to fight 185 is good, 205 is good. But in terms of cutting weight, I prefer to fight 205 for sure.
Gotcha. All right. Lyoto Machida is our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. All right, Dan, I'll go to you first. What do you have for the Dragon?
Hey, Lyoto, obviously, first, congratulations on a beautiful performance there. But let me ask you, obviously, weight cutting-wise, it is a lot easier. But as far as your training camp, training at that weight and getting in, stepping in the cage at that weight of 205, light heavyweight, did you still feel just as fast, or did you maybe even feel faster considering you're fighting up a division, but you still have that middleweight speed?
No, I feel like I'm still fast for 205 because I came from karate. Karate requires a lot of speed during the train, so I train a lot of that. And when I train with other heavyweights, light heavyweights, I feel the difference in terms of speed because I can do fast, I can move a lot, and also I have the strength. The strength is so important because once I hit the guy in 205, I feel the difference if I compare myself in 185. Like much more power, much more impact in each technique, in each punch and kick.
Obviously, my colleague George here just mentioned the 205 division, but 185 pounds has its title fight this weekend between Lovato Jr. and Musasi. Obviously, you faced Musasi before, and Lovato Jr., he comes from the same camp as your last opponent, Rafael Carvalho. He trains at that Evolu Cow under Andre Dida. Can you give us a breakdown or maybe a prediction how you see that fight going this weekend, Lyoto?
So we cannot say that Lovato is too experienced fighter, but I mean, like, he's so strong. He has the will to become victorious. That's so important, and he has a lot of good guys around him, like Andre Dida, Rafael Carvalho, so Aveo, Mauricio Aveo, Dida's brother. So that's those guys train Lovato, and Lovato has a very good jiu-jitsu. But Musasi is a former champion strike forcer. He fought a lot of legend fighters in UFC, and now he's the current Bellator champion. So he has a lot of fights under his belt. He has a lot of experience in terms of MMA fights. So it's hard to foresee this fight. I'll be rooting for Lovato because we get along. I have a lot of respect. We already fought each other in a submission event almost 15 years ago.
Wow.
But I like the way that he fights. I like the way that he behaved outside the cage as well.
Goes, what do you have for Lyoto Machida?
Lyoto, can you talk a little bit about the camp going in this time? If there's one thing that really stood out to me was your confidence level and your timing was impeccable in this fight. It seemed like by looking at the way you looked, the way you were acting, even the things you were saying, it seemed like this was one of the better training camps you've ever had.
So, it's a process because since I had my last loss in UFC against Derek Brunson, I decided to change everything in my camp. Like, I went back to my roots, I mean, like, I went back to karate training because my father and my head coach and my brother Shinzo, my head coach Vinicio, so they kept saying to me that, Lioto, you have to come back to your roots. That makes the difference between you and others. So you got to believe that. Because I was, like, kind of lost, you know, because I was training a little bit of boxing, a little bit of Muay Thai. I kind of forgot my karate. I put apart my karate. And I could come back strongly. So it's almost one year and a half that I've been training in that system, like in this process. I've been taking a long time, like a year and a half. Now I feel the difference. I can feel more confident, more comfortable with the position, with my footwork. I can say, like, everything already came back. I feel that. No.
The same way you felt your confidence, could you kind of feel some of that of Chael Sonnen, his confidence going away? Early in the fight, he shot on you. He got a good hold of you, but you fought him off. And those are kind of like the mini battles that we talk about within the fight, where I felt like the second you did that, that was like a little victory there. Did you feel that as well?
No, what I felt was he came a lot, you know? I believe that he was so confident. Even after my first knee, he could survive there, and he was still in the fight, even in the beginning of the fight in the second round. But he didn't have a time to answer, to stay in fight, because it was right at the beginning of the second round, I hit him again with my knee, and I could capitalize on that. So I took advantage. And I just kept punching him until the fight was stopped.
Well, Lioto, you're in a great position. You got a win over the middleweight champ and the light heavyweight champ. You got a 4-5 win streak going on. And, I mean, things just look great for you. So you're in a very favorable position. I hope the one you want materializes for you, because you've definitely put your time in the sport. You paid your dues. So congrats on a great win this past Friday night at Madison Square Garden, and thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time too, man. And I'll be waiting here. Who knows? I can get 2 belts in the same event. That will be a dream come true. But let's do one thing at a time. Which comes first, I'll be ready.
Two in one night would be very tough, but if someone could do it, it'd be
tough.
You.
Very tough.
All right, Lioto. Take care. Have a nice evening.
Okay, thank you so much. You too, man.
All right.
Bye.
See you later. Bye. Folks, that's Lioto Machida. There you have it. At Lioto Machida FW on Twitter. We're going to go to a break. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 156. Don't touch that dial. We'll be back. We still got some more MMA to talk about.
All jokes aside, George and Goz are some of the best chicks I know. Here we go with more verbal sparring. Take it away, ladies.
Listen to Lisa Ann Does Fantasy with the world famous Lisa Ann tonight at 10 Eastern on Fantasy Sports Radio. From the NBA draft and free agency to Major League Baseball and fantasy football, hear about all the sports you love and talk with Lisa Ann. Sirius 210, XM 87, and streaming on your phone and at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. The Lisa Ann? Or is this another Lisa Ann?
Lisa Ann.
Okay. Because Lisa Ann Does Fantasy, that kind of makes me think of another Lisa Ann.
No, not that Lisa Ann.
Oh, okay. Why do they tease it, though? It's almost like they want you to think that that might be the other one.
Who, Lisa Ann?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, all right. All right, folks. So, we're all over the place here, but we had a surprise guest, and come on. You got to give Brian Butler some time, because that guy represents all the big names, or a lot of the big names, I should say. And, of course, like I said earlier today, this is a show that goes 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. We have plenty of time to cover a lot of stuff. But I think it would be appropriate to just finish out one key matchup that we left out from Bellator 222. Kyoji Horiguchi captured the Bellator Bantamweight title by defeating Darian Caldwell. Now, remember, Darian Caldwell went over to Ryzen to compete for the Ryzen Bantamweight title. And Kyoji Horiguchi Kyoji Horiguchi won that fight. Caldwell was doing well, so I think everybody thought, he got caught. He's going to even the score up here. But that Horiguchi, man, he weathered a couple storms and came back and won it. And so now he's the Ryzen Bantamweight champ and the Bellator Bantamweight champ. So kudos to him. He's a champ of a different variation. He's just a champ, simultaneous champ from two major leagues.
We need a name for it, though.
So good on him. Doesn't mean Darian Caldwell's bad. I think Horiguchi just got his number. And Horiguchi, much respect. This guy went 7-1 as a UFC flyweight, only losing to Demetrius Johnson. That's a formidable record. And then since then, I think he's got like 12 wins in a row. He's captured a Grand Prix. He's also captured the Ryzen title, their undisputed title, and now the Bellator title. So we're talking about a pound-for-pound fighter right now who I submitted when we talked about rankings today. I submitted that he should join the pound-for-pound rankings because he's doing it at multiple weight classes. He's winning titles. Mm-hmm. And even though it wasn't a title defense, he did face the same guy that he beat. It just so happened to be in another league. But it would have been the same thing as Darian Caldwell just coming back and, you know, I mean, I guess different cages, ropes, whatever. But still, it was still a great win for him. But Kyoji Horiguchi, I think, has cemented himself as the best fighter out of Japan. And that when you look at just the statistics. Don't talk to me about aura and right. The legendary status. I get it. I get Sakuraba's, and there's some other fighters that have just done some incredible stuff. But I'm talking about, like, competing versus the elite in a division and doing it on multiple platforms and in multiple divisions and still holding on to an impressive record. That one's hard to top right now in my eyes. That's just my opinion. What do you guys think of Horiguchi over Caldwell?
I'm trying to figure out if that's a bad thing for Bellator. I mean, obviously, you don't want your champion to lose his belt and it go to another organization, but I don't look at it so much as Bellator. I look at it as Scott Coker and the relationship he's had with Japanese MMA throughout his career, kickboxing. I think they'll figure out, like, it's not the way when Dana White was representing the UFC against Pride and you couldn't really trust some of these things that they were doing back and forth. They're making bets against each other. I think Horiguchi will probably come back, defend that belt. I don't think it'll end up being as bad as some people were making it sound.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with you, Goz, but I like that you brought up the pound-for-pound stuff, George, because I agree. He's doing it in multiple weight classes, multiple organizations across the world, and even his win right before this, it was against a guy who I believe was in the flyweight rankings before those things kind of got picked apart. Ben Wynn, yeah. I mean, he was, at least for a time, a ranked UFC flyweight, and that he iced him right before this fight. And then you look at Caldwell's probably going, you know, he hinted at going to that 145 tournament that they might be doing. And that could be Caldwell's introduction.
Oh, is he?
I've heard him hint to it. And it makes sense because, you know, we talked about it. He's a big bantamweight.
Oh, he sure
is. He's 5'10", cutting down with a huge reach. I mean, he's got like almost like a middleweight or welterweight reach on him. So let's say he goes up to featherweight and starts taking names there, Caldwell does. That's only going to make Gucci look even better from 145s to 125s and everything in between.
Dare I say Gucci's going to look Gucci?
I think he's going to look Gucci.
Come on. And I don't think, you guys.
But about the Scott Coker thing, that's an interesting thing. I don't think it's a bad thing either. I thought about that going in because I'm picking Horiguchi to win this thing going in. So how does that work for Scott Coker? And I think it's more just tendering the relationship, all the things that are going to kind of pop out of that. Like we're seeing, you know, Patricio Pitbull go over to that lightweight tournament.
That's right.
And you know who I would love to see him mix it? It would be a great action fight, a guy we've had on this show who kind of resurges his career over there in Risen, Damian Beatdown Brown. I mean, that guy's always in fun fights. You know, so I think we're going to see a lot of fun matchups, and I think, you know, and Bellator kind of gets Gucci for themselves, gets Horiguchi there for themselves, you know. So I think it's a win-win. And as far as that division, it could use a champion that maybe only defends, you know, maybe twice a year, not the three times a year, because you think about it, they're also breeding some sharks. I mean, they were pumping up James Gallagher, then some guy named Ricky Bandejas comes on and derails that train, and then Ricky Bandejas got derailed by some guy named Patrick Mix this last weekend.
We call that one, yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of talent growing at Bellator at bantamweight. So I'm not too worried.
Well, one more thing here: Juan Archuleta wants to drop to bantamweight and compete versus Horiguchi, and he's really campaigning. And he says, "I'll even go to Japan and do it." So maybe Scott Coker is open to a back and forth, and
we're going to talk to him.
I'd like to see it too, but I was wondering. I thought Archuleta would want to be in that Grand Prix. We're out of here. We got to thank Brian Butler for his time, Lyoto Machida, and who else? Oh, Rob Font. Tomorrow we'll be back at 8 Eastern. Go out there and be a champion.